by Leanna, a drunk, and a little bit of about myself. I was born in Vietnam, actually, and came to the United States as refugees with my parents back in 1996. We came through Lutheran Family Social Services, and that was in Greensboro back in the day. And I think because there was a lot of the Monsignor people who were resettled in North Carolina, you know, within Raleigh, Charlotte area and Greensboro, and then they put us in Greensboro. There's 9 of us, 5 boys and 4 girls. My parents have 9 children. So I still have 2 siblings in Vietnam, my oldest sister and one of my oldest brother. Actually, my second sister, who just arrived in Greensboro June 5th, her and her husband and 3 kids, so exciting to have her over here. You know, I have been back to Vietnam in 2007, so I saw her, but like my younger sibling have not been back, so they have not seen her since 1996, so that was very exciting. I am number, 6. Yeah. I am the last daughter in the family, and I fall in number 6. Our ancestor or the indigenous people in Vietnam. So we do not identify as Vietnamese because, even if you're in Vietnam, the government does not identify you as Kinh. They identify you as your ethnic group. So we are one of the minority group in Vietnam. And so when we come to America, the word that was given to us is the word Montagnard, which is kind of like this big umbrella. And then you have the different tribal group under that umbrella. So that's what, to use it one term, just kind of like to easier to identify the different people who kind of have the same common thing kind of thing. It's more like a lot of the younger generation does not like to identify or be called Montagnard. They would rather want to be called by their ethnicity, just because the word Montagnard was kind of given to us. It's kind of like, what is that word? Colonialism or something like that. Yeah, that's why a lot of the young people doesn't like to be called that. a lot of the people that I know now want to be called by their tribal name. So I am Rade or Ede. So I'm from the Rade tribes, and then you have like people who are Bernhar, Kaha, Jirai. So there's different ethnic group. There's a lot of different ethnic group that came to the United States as refugee right after the Vietnam War. So in Vietnam, you don't really see a lot of them, but when you're here, you kind of connect with a lot of different people who don't speak the same language as you, but we're all from the same country. A lot of the Montagnard people live in the Central Highland in Vietnam, and a lot of them were recruited by the U.S. Special Forces or the CIA as well during the Vietnam War. A lot of them fought alongside the United States soldier, and once the war was over and the United States left, a lot of people who had any kind of involvement with the U.S. Special Forces or with the American people were put in the re-educational camp prison. Some of them escaped to the jungle and thought they were still fighting the war for years and years. And those that were caught got put in prison. So my father was among the one that got caught, and he served 7 years of his life in prison. And then when he came out in 1992, they had me a year later. So my father actually passed away about 11 years ago. So during the time he was alive, he didn't talk much about it. At the time, the Vietnam War, and there was some story that I hear through my mother while the time that he was in prison at the re-education camp. It was really far away from the village, so they couldn't really visit. They could not visit for years and years. Basically, back in the day, imagine like in 1975, 76, you have nothing, but some people don't even have bicycle, so you can't really go far. So my mom didn't visit, just because of the lack of transportation, and some family you weren't allowed to visit. So I hear story from my mom, the when my dad was in the re-education camp, I remember her telling a story that a lot of the women or a lot of the family in the different villages had to work for the government. It's kind of like a mandatory working labor, working out in the field. I remember her she was telling me that, you know, one of my siblings was sick and she still she would carry him on her back and still go to work, because if you don't go to work, you lose your points. And if you don't lose, if you lose your point, you didn't get, like, they didn't give you like rice or any other thing. So, you know, I think a lot of the trauma that my mom had right after Vietnam War, just being a single mother, it still carries on to her today. You know, every once in a while, she still talk about, like, you know, she had one of my brother, like around 1975, beginning of 1975, she tell a story how they he was 6 days old and they were hiding in this little holes with a whole bunch of other people, and ant was all over him, and how, you know, they had to move from one village to another, and she had just given birth and she almost died, you know, stuff like that. And she is still traumatized to her today, even though she's old. And then it kind of like bring it down to me as well, because I'm the one that's like listening to that kind of story, you know, even though like I am a trained social worker, clinical social worker, but hearing the story from your own parents is different from hearing the story from your clients, you know. So I think that generation trauma that kind of passed down, it's real, and it affects us, because when our parents, you know, have some kind of flashback and they get mad at each other or something, and then we're the one who hear it, and then it affected us on, you know, our emotion and mental health and stuff like that. I remember everything, like my village. I remember where all the streets are and some of the houses are. Like sometimes I would tell stories to my kid and just imagine, like, okay, our house was like the last house on that road. And I remember we had to like go up there to watch there when there's a big car that come by, you know, stuff like that. But when I went back in 2007, a lot has changed. Everything got smaller. Back when I was little, everything was so big, you know. But a lot of stuff has changed, but I have that childhood memory in my head, because, you know, actually a couple weeks ago we were talking about how, like, we said, yeah, we were poor, we didn't have anything, but we had the greatest childhood ever, you know. We were doing this, doing that, we were just all kind of stuff. We were talking about at work on some of the stuff that we have done. And yeah, I had a, that's why I said, like I said, you know, even though we were poor, consider being poor, but we didn't consider us being poor, because everybody was the same, you know. No one was like have more money than you or whatnot, or have bigger land or something like that. So we had a great childhood. You know, I think like at that time, just thinking about it now, I can't remember much or can't recall. I remember missing my two cousins that who were, you know, we were best friends. I remember leaving them, being sad, and we wrote letters to each other back in the day. And I remember one of my cousins, she was like, what is the dirt over there look like, you know, in the United States, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, back in the day, it's like, even though you're homesick, but there was like no connection to home, versus now you can just click a button on your messenger and there you can FaceTime each other and stuff like that, you know. Because of that technology changes, I think I do feel like closer to my other sibling and my niece and nephew now, versus back in the day, you know, where you had to go buy the phone card to dial all those numbers and all that. Yeah. I think for me, I had it, you know, being a teenager, I was put in seventh grade when I came to United States. And I remember being at Allen Middle School. That was the first school that I went. I didn't speak any English. I got bullied and stuff like that. Just, you know, this girl behind me was pulling my hair and stuff like that. I didn't know how to tell her to stop, you know. So I was relying on some of my classmates. I remember a couple of them, and, you know, we're still in connection now in Greensboro. that they came before me. So they spoke a little bit English, just kind of like follow them around and stuff like that. Because back in the day, they didn't have ESL classes like they do now. Like they have newcomer. They didn't, you know, we were just put in the school with all the American kids and other kids and just go with the flow kind of thing. I think it was a hard transition. I was sad at times and stuff like that, but I think as we kind of you know, blend in with everybody and just learning more a little bit, it got better. And then my pastor, one of our pastor, former pastor, he moved us to the Summit and Cone apartment. At that place, that time, it was like all the people who were from Monsignor lived there, except for like one family. I talked about that just the other day. I was like, yes, you know, that was where we felt at home, because there were people like us, people who spoke our language. So it feels more like home. And then I went to ACOP Middle School and I met Miss Hoyer. She's one of my good memories. You know, she was a great teacher and had a great impact, I think, in my life back then. Was helping me a lot. But at the beginning, it was hard. And then as you continue, you know, it gets better. You know, the Monsignor Dega Association, the organization I work now, was one of the organizations help my family. I remember them driving us to like Charlotte for our fingerprint or a green card and do paperwork and stuff like that. But my, you know, they help a lot. So I didn't see, you know, as far as like my parents struggle in that area, except for like, you know, financial and stuff like that, just working all the time. So basically my brothers and I, we just kind of took care of ourselves kind of thing, you know, because if you remember back in the day, minimum wage was like $5, $5.50. So a lot of the parents, you know, work one or two jobs and they don't have time to go to classes. By the time they get home, working in a factory two job, they're tired. You know, so a lot of the children, like, well, for us especially, we just kind of took care of ourselves. And I think just because of where we, you know, where we came from and how we were raised, we just kind of, you know how to be responsible and stuff like that. You know, I was just talking to one of my coworkers the other day. I was like, I don't remember how I discovered social work, but when I got into it and got into the program, and I was like, why didn't I think about this earlier? You know, why didn't I think about this? And now, but you know, it's okay. I mean, it's better late than never. I mean, I went to school. I went back to school after I have two kids. You know, I went back to school after I have two kids. And then I completed my BSW in 2016. And then I worked for a couple of years and I went back for my master. So I just graduated in May with my master in social work from UNCG and ANT, the joint program. I find social work fits me best because when I was doing some volunteer work with the church or some community member or something like that, or family friend would just come to me and ask for help with different things like doctor appointments or other things, stuff like that. You know, I was already been helping people in the community through doing some volunteer work. So when I went back, and, you know, our professor showed us one of this video that, you know, social worker is not just one thing. In 2015, I met Dr. Bailey. He was a professor at one of our social work diversity class. And I noticed his bracelet. You know, he wear the Monsignor bracelet that we wear back in the day. So I was like, Dr. Bailey, you know, I want to do something where, you know, we can encourage youth to go to school and want to do something to like give back to the community. A lot of us saw that we're losing our language. We're losing a lot of the traditional thing like music, clothing and stuff like that. So we wanted to kind of find a way to preserve our culture. So that's why we came up with the Monsignor American Organization in 2015. We found out the MBA was still open. So we met with some of the people that work there. And we said, you know, some of your mission and vision are the same as ours. Instead of us starting a brand new organization with our own 501c3, why don't we just merge and be under MDA's umbrella? So that's what we did. So, you know, we have at MDA, we have different funding. We have different program. Our stake program, which is the RSS, that allow us to serve anyone who is and who have a refugee status. And then other fundings give us the opportunity to serve the Monsignor community member who's been here over 70 to 80% of the people we serve are from the Monsignor community, and then the other 70% are from non-Monsignor community members. Actually, I have been promoted to be the executive director for the organization as of July 1st. That is my next big role.
You don't really see, as well as like in the Monsignor community, you don't really see women in leadership role. If you really look back and think about it, all the people that I have seen as far as leader are men, either in church or some kind of, you know, other leadership role, you always have seen men, and the women are like, you know, kind of like standing beside them or wait for your husband, stuff like that. And to me, you know, we're like the next generation, you know. Yes, I'm grateful for my husband, and he's my number one supporter, cheerleader, and everything, and support everything that I do. But I think it's when it comes to this kind of work, you see a lot of women who are stepping up and stepping into that leadership roles. That's what I have seen in the past couple of years. I think that would be one of my asks, is just to support smaller organizations like ours, because we are, you know, the next generation who's assisting our community members. And I think like back in the day when people were the American organization, right, they always are like, oh, train the people, get the people from the community, you know, stuff like that. So here we are, people from the community trying to help the people in the community. So I think it's important that bigger organization or corporation realize that they need to support smaller organization. If people need help, if people from the community need help, doesn't know where to start, if they're thinking about school and doesn't know where to start, and you know, we're here, our organization here, we can help lead you to the right direction as far as education, or connect you with the different people that we know in the community or other organizations.